Laat me je voorstellen aan Pim Verlaan.
Begin op een hele jonge leeftijd met beleggen. Die horizon die jij hebt, gaat zoveel voordeel opleveren.
En Pim is een man met een missie. Iedereen veilig en verantwoord leren beleggen.
Als je echt iets wil leren, leer dat van iemand die één stapje vooruit loopt.
Hij legt je uit op welke manieren je kan beleggen.
Elke bank heeft eigenlijk zijn eigen beleggingsfonds. Ik hou daar helemaal niet van.
Op welke manieren je beter kan beleggen. En hij rekent je voordeel op de euro nauwkeurig uit.
192.000 euro minder rendement.
Zelf leren beleggen.
Niemand vertelt dit.
Pim dus wel. In Jong Beleggen, de podcast.
Nou, dat is toch fantastisch?
Het is nog ochtend in het prehistorische bos, 68 miljoen jaar geleden. Vanmiddag wordt het heet, maar nu is het nog koel. Dauwdruppels glinsteren op de varens en er hangt nog ochtendnevel tussen de stammen van de bomen. Het zijn echte woudreuzen, immense pilaren van een groene kerk waarvan het bladerdak tientallen meters hoog bijna niet is te zien. En hoog bovenop een boomtak gezeten is zelfs een tyrannosaurus, diep beneden, nog klein. Maar geluid maakt hij wel. Zelfs hierboven voel je de grond licht trillen als het beest briesend tussen de bomen doordreunt. In de verte passeert een groepje jonge sauropoden, hun lange nekken evenwijdig met de stammen, sierlijk recht omhoog. En als de heersers van de dino-tijd verdwenen zijn, wordt het weer stil in het woud. Maar niet echt, want als je goed kijkt en luistert, wemelt het tussen de bomen en onder varens van het leven. Vanaf de hoge boomtak klimt een klein diertje handig omlaag. Met zijn lange staart en bruine vacht lijkt het op een kruising tussen een muis en een eekhoorn. Voorzichtig kijkt het om zich heen, voordat het razendsnel tussen de varens verdwijnt, in de richting van een beekje verderop. Dit is niet het enige zoogdier. Het bos krioelt ervan. Muisachtige, eekhoornachtige, otterachtige. In bomen, in holletjes en tussen varens. Vandaag glijdt onze blik omlaag naar wat zich tussen de voeten van de reusachtige dino's afspeelt. Want als je dacht dat daar in hun schaduw alleen maar kleine muisachtige zoogdiertjes zaten te trillen van angst, dan heb je het mis. Tussen de dinopoten was een revolutie gaande.
Maarten, sorry jongens, deze podcast heet Dinocast, maar we gaan het vandaag hebben over de anti-dino's, zou ik bijna zeggen, zoogdieren.
Het zijn eigenlijk geen anti-dino's. Je kunt niet, want het is niet zo dat ze georganiseerd waren in een soort van vakbeweging.
Guerrilla.
Die regelmatig demonstreerden tegen de dino's, weg met de dino's. Waar blijft de inslag? Zoiets dergelijks, dat was het niet. Maar het is wel een feit dat toch het beeld is ontstaan dat in het dino-tijdperk vrijwel geen zoogdieren waren. Als er al zoogdieren waren, waren het minime spitsmuisachtige beestjes.
Losers waren het.
Ja, het waren losers die onder de grond zaten en die bij elke dreunende voetstap van zo'n sauropoden die op de vlucht sloegen. Maar dat was eigenlijk niet zo. Er was een vrij omvangrijke populatie zoogdieren. Ook wel wat grotere zoogdieren dan alleen spitsmuizen.
Ja.
Het wonderbare feit blijft naar mijn idee toch dat die dino's vrijwel allemaal verdwenen zijn. Behalve dus degene die tenslotte de vogels hebben opgeleverd. Maar dat die zoogdieren eigenlijk daarna beginnen aan een enorme rus naar dominantie van het... Laten we zeggen van het dierenrijk om het zo maar. Ik zie even af van de insecten waar we ooit nog een speciaal programma over gaan maken.
Nee, maar je hebt gelijk. Hè. Er is natuurlijk de oplossing van dat raadsel ligt in de dino-tijd. Daar hebben ze zich natuurlijk ontwikkeld in de schaduw van die grote dino's. Hebben ze zich ontwikkeld op een hele slimme manier. Namelijk door kleiner te worden en door generalisten te worden. Maar nu verklappen we natuurlijk al een beetje het verhaal.
En natuurlijk misschien deels nachtdieren. Dat kan ook. Ja. Kan ook. schelen natuurlijk.
Ja. We spreken met een hele leuke Schotse paleontologe. Dat doen we via een videoverbinding, want we konden echt niet naar haar toe. Zij is echt een rising star in de wereld van de dino's. Een expert op het gebied van zoogdieren in deze tijd. Zij heet Elsa Pankyroly, prachtige naam ook.
Ja.
En ze schreef een boek dat heet Beasts Before Us. Nou, letterlijk natuurlijk, de voorouders van onszelf. Ja, ik durf te beweren dat je beeld van de dino-tijd na deze aflevering niet meer hetzelfde zal zijn.
Nee, dat denk ik ook.
Terwijl je nog even een koekje eet van wat mijn vrouw gebakken heeft.
Een heerlijk koekje.
Kijk, Jan, een heerlijk koekje. Je mag echt gewoon eten tijdens het opnemen, dat is geen probleem. Terug naar de zoogdieren. Jongens, we gaan een wereld openen die ik nog nooit gezien had. En die jullie denk ik ook nog nooit gezien hebben. Op naar zoogdieren in DinoCast.
Maarten van Rossum en ik, Gijs Rademaker, nemen je mee naar miljoenen jaren geleden. Want elke week worden er nieuwe dino's opgegraven en de ene ontdekking volgt de andere op.
En resten ontdekt van de grootste dinosaurus.
De dino die ze vonden is veel specialer dan ze dachten.
More than 20 different dinosaur tracks.
Vergeet alles wat je dacht te weten over dinosauriërs. Het is tijd voor een nieuwe kennismaking met onze oude vrienden. In de podcast voor iedereen die vroeger al van dino's hield en nu nog steeds een beetje. Welkom bij DinoCast.
I'm 78 years old. Originally I was a historian. But nowadays I'm a specialist on all fields that exist in the world.
Actually, he is.
So I'm a specialist on dinos, but I must confess that I'm not at all a specialist on mammals in the era of the dinos, the thing that we are going to talk about.
So I can say anything and you won't know if I'm right or not. It's great.
Yeah, you can tell us anything that you want.
Ja, dit is hoe Maarten zich dus voorstelt aan iemand, als een beetje van alles weter. En dat klopt natuurlijk, maar hij geeft ook meteen toe dat zoogdieren uit de dino-tijd dat een zwak punt is. Mooi dat Elsa dat bij hem, bij ons allemaal, gaat verhelpen.
Anna? Elsa?
Psst! Elsa! Wake up!
Queen Elsa of Arendelle.
Elsa Pankyroly, niet uit de hooglanden van Arendelle, maar uit die van Schotland.
Yes, so I'm Dr. Elsa Pankyroly, and I'm originally from the Scottish Highlands, but I now work as a researcher at the Oxford University Museum of Natural History. But I'm particularly interested in the origin of mammals.
Extra geïnteresseerd in mammals, in zoogdieren. Maar ze geeft eerlijk toe, het begon, hoe kan het ook anders, bij dino's.
Well, I think like everyone, I do remember being mad about dinosaurs at one point, but I don't think I ever really seriously thought that was a career or anything, you know, like it was like trying to be an astronaut or something like that. It's like it's an unattainable career. And so I think I just moved on and decided to do other things. Came back to it much, much later in life and realized that you actually really can study that. That is a thing. It's a proper profession.
I think it's an excellent idea to be interested in mammals in the era of the dinos, because most people think that the mammals didn't exist at all and that the whole planet was dominated by dinos. So I think it's a great subject. And I think I love mammals more than dinos if it comes to the extremities. Well, not Gijs is not, doesn't agree with me, but...
It doesn't have to be an either or. You can like them both, you know. You can love both of them.
Oh,
I do.
How political of you.
It's very difficult. It's very difficult to love two things at the same time just as much. And of course, as long as you don't love the T-Rex, it's okay with me.
He hates the T-Rex.
Oh, really?
Maarten, please. This is only 5 minutes into the recording and you start about hating the T-Rex again. Why?
I think I should make that clear.
Okay,
good. It's the worst product of the evolution.
Okay, Elsa.
Is it not the junk food of dinosaurs, is it?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
Oh, God, he agrees with him. This is gonna be so long. Ja, laten we het in godesnaam snel over zoogdieren gaan hebben. Maar wat zijn dat, zoogdieren? Ja, dieren die zogen. Is het zo simpel? Natuurlijk niet. So, what is a mammal? What is it?
It's a really good question to ask because I think, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe some of the audience is wondering that. Other ones think that they might know what a mammal is, but if you actually ask someone to define it, what are the definitions? I mean, the most obvious ones are that mammals have fur or hair. And even the ones that we have today, like whales and dolphins, that don't seem to have any fur. Of course, they come from furred ancestors and they've just lost it. And of course, they produce milk. And all mammals produce milk. It's one of the absolute basic things about them.
Okay, dus ze hebben een vacht of haren en ze geven melk. Maar er is meer wat een zoogdier maakt. Het gehoor, bijvoorbeeld.
One thing that's really important is the evolution of their ear. So mammals have three bones in their sight, right inside their ear, that gives them really exquisite hearing, a really big range of hearing, very high frequency, very low frequency.
Ja, de drie beroemde botjes in ons oor, met de leuke namen hamer, stijgbeugel en aanbeeld. Zij zorgen er samen voor dat het gehoor van zoogdieren een bereik heeft dat dat van de concurrentie ver overstijgt. Hoe ontwikkel je nou precies zulke botjes? Nou, dat is natuurlijk geen plan geweest, maar Elsa weet wel waarom het zo gegaan is.
It's because mammals went through this period where they became extremely small. And when you're very, very small, the different ways that you experience like loads and pressures on your body change a great deal. And they think that when these animals became very, very small, they no longer needed to use all these multiple bones to process their food. And of course, nature doesn't like waste. So rather than the bones just disappearing completely, they ended up becoming incorporated increasingly into how they were hearing. And eventually they shrunk and became part of the ear.
Dus de botjes in je oor waren ooit enorme stukken van onze kaak. Dat is een bizar idee, toch? Maar dit is dus hoe evolutie gaat, legt Elsa uit.
Another thing, of course, evolution loves to do is to take something that evolved for a completely different purpose and use it for new things. So I think hair and feathers is a great example of that. They probably originally evolved for quite different reasons for than they've ended up being used, you know. I don't think mammals evolved hair, for example, to keep warm. They're far more likely to have evolved whiskers and bits of hair for sensing their world in the dark, underground, for example. And then, you know, they end up getting hairier because it turns out they can live in colder places and then you end up with mammoths. Yeah, it's just...
Yeah, well,
I skip a little bit in the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
So actually, you could conclude that we as mammals, and we humans too, have quite a lot of useful things just because we started out as very small animals underground.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You said earlier about people thinking mammals in the time of dinosaurs were all like losers and boring and tiny. And some of them were tiny, but being tiny actually did all kinds of things to their bodies that we are now benefiting from. Yeah. It's probably part of the reason that they became more warm-blooded. It just led to all kinds of different things. And their senses, of course, as well. Mammals have got really excellent sense of hearing and sense of smell. We're the smelliest animals. You know, this is all probably linked to being very small and living, coming out at night more than during the day. It's difficult to get, you fall into using the words wrong because it doesn't lead to it because they can't think about it, of course. They don't sit and think, you know what I could really do with is some whiskers. That'd be so useful. But a random mutation occurs and mutations build up on one and the other. And then eventually, you know, crazy things happen. I think that's the wonder of evolution, isn't it?
Okay, zoogdierkenmerken zijn dus haar, melk, een fantastisch gehoor. Maar dan is er nog één superbelangrijk kenmerk over. Een kenmerk dat je zelf kan voelen. Een kenmerk dat je zelf kan voelen als je met je tong over al je tanden strijkt.
I read somewhere that mammals have different teeth. Well, dinos had all the same teeth.
That's also true, yes. So another thing that mammals have is what we would say is really specialised teeth. So in a lot of reptiles and amphibians, they either have no teeth or they have very similar teeth all along the jaw. And if you think of like a T-Rex, for example, they have the sort of same pointy teeth all around their mouths. But if you think just of your own teeth, you have these sort of flat, you know, biting teeth at the front, and then you have pointed canine teeth, and then you have flatter teeth at the back for grinding. So each part of your row of teeth has a sort of specialist thing that it does. And that's a very mammally thing to have. It really defines the group, because we can process our food really, really well using these different types of teeth. Those are the main things that kind of define what a mammal is.
Okay, nu we weten wat een zoogdier is, gaan we kijken hoe ze zijn ontstaan. En daarvoor moeten we honderden miljoenen jaren terug. Niet naar de dino-tijd, maar nog verder. We reizen naar het carboon-tijdperk, zo'n 320 miljoen jaar geleden. Dat is het punt waar Elsa ons mee naartoe neemt.
Well, I decided that was a good point to start, because you know, it's really when our group that we belong to, it kind of sets off in their own direction and starts doing their own thing. So that's around about sort of 320 million years ago, in a time period called the Carboniferous. So, you know, to set the scene, this is what I love about paleontology. It's like the closest you can get to going to an alien planet, but it's our planet. So the world was covered in these really hot, swampy forests. But the trees are not trees like we know them. They're actually really closely related to quill warts and club mosses, which are these things, tiny little things that live in the sort of understory of forests today. But they were the size of trees, you know, 30 meters tall, and it was hot, and there was lots and lots of oxygen. So you had, this planet was full of giant insects because they could grow much bigger from all the oxygen. So it was a really amazing time period as well. And that's
yeah, indeed, it almost seems alien.
Yeah, and that's where we have our beginnings.
May I ask one little question?
Of course.
If there was that much oxygen, how about all these forests burning, actually?
Yeah, there is evidence for that.
Yeah.
Even though it was so damp and swampy, they do find charcoal burnt layers, which indicate that there were really bad forest fires as well.
En in deze vochtige wereld vol reuzeninsecten kropen de voorouders van de dino's en van ons, hè, dat zijn namelijk dezelfde dieren, langzaam vanuit het water het land op.
And the backboned four-legged animals have of course come out of the water. They've evolved from this particular type of fish. They've come out of the water and they are called tetrapods. And like you say, they kind of, if you saw one, you might think, oh, look, it's a lizard.
Yeah, Elsa, to me, these animals seem so, well, so slow and crawling out of the water very slowly. Like if the forest was on fire, they wouldn't be able to run or to flee. Is this real, or is this something I just made up in my mind?
I think we all have a tendency to imagine everything in the past really slowly. You know, moving really slowly because it's the past, and like everything was primitive and early and it must have just been glumping along, you know. But I suspect it will be just like the modern day. Some of them might have been quite fast, some of them might not.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have had such, they wouldn't have necessarily had warm, you know, as warm blood. You know, they would have been cold-blooded perhaps. So they might have been a little bit more sluggish, more like a reptile.
Ja, deze tetrapods liepen misschien als hagedissen, keken als hagedissen, voelden waarschijnlijk als hagedissen, maar ze zijn het niet.
At this point, they aren't lizards, they aren't mammals, they are just tetrapods. They're the thing that comes before everything. They're the kind of ancestor of them all. So the amphibians have already split off, they've gone off to do their own thing, and then this final split is between these two sort of great houses. It's like Hogwarts, you know?
This is,
I don't know what you want to say, maybe Gryffindor and Slytherin, maybe?
When I call your name, you will come forth. I shall place the sorting hat on your head, and you will be sorted into your houses. Draco Malfoy.
Slytherin!
That's not a witch or wizard who went bad. It wasn't in Slytherin.
Where to put you?
better be Gryffindor!
Ja, nou, de Sorting Hat is oud, maar geen 300 miljoen jaar oud. Nee, die hagedisachtige tetrapods, die splitsen zichzelf in twee groepen. Nou, niet in Slytherin en Gryffindor, maar in de sauropside, waar de dino's en dus de vogels uit voort zullen komen, en de groep waar wij, de zoogdieren, van afstammen. En ja, die groep die heeft wel een naam die prima in Harry Potter had gepast. De synapsids.
Exactly. So they split into these two groups. So this is when we get the very, very first animals that are on our line. They're our most ancient ancestors. And they become these creatures called synapsids. And we are also synapsids. It's like the biggest grouping that we belong to. But at this point back in time, you know, they aren't mammals. They aren't any of these later groups. They are just synapsids. And they look... They do look lizardy. They are kind of low to the ground, legs out to the side. They wouldn't have been scaly like a lizard. They would have had sort of soft glandular skin. And they would have been about the length maybe of your forearm. Not very big.
No, that's not very big. Okay, but if you saw them both, if you saw both types, how would you know who's in Slytherin and who's in Gryffindor?
Well, obviously I put them in the Sorting Hat.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough.
No, well, in this case, I use the paleontology Sorting Hat. So, so there's lots of little details of their skeleton, like there always is. One of the really, like, I'm going to say obvious, but I'm going to use air quotes because it's not that obvious, but is in their skull. So behind the eye in the skull, animals have different like holes in the skull called fenestra. And in the earliest synapsids, they only have one hole in the skull behind each eye. And we've still got it. And you can actually feel it in your own skull. It's just if you put your fingers behind your eye, you can feel there's like an indent in your skull, a little hole, which is filled with muscle, of course, for us. Well, that's it. That's it still in your skull, this leftover trademark that makes you a synapsid. So that's one of the main ways that we tell. But of course, there's little details of the rest of the skeleton, depending on what bits you find.
So proud to be still be a synapsid.
Exactly. Yeah. That needs to be on a t-shirt.
Yeah, that would be a great shirt, actually. Ja, we zijn allemaal synapsids. En waarom zijn we daar niet trots op? Nou, als je zo'n DinoCast Proud to be a Synapsid t-shirt wil, dan moet je ons even een mailtje sturen, want ik zal er een paar laten maken. Echte collectors items worden dat natuurlijk. Maar goed, terwijl ik aan het praten ben over t-shirts, verstrijken er miljoenen jaren. En zijn we aanbeland in het volgende tijdvak, het Perm, vlak voor de dino-tijd. Een tijdperk waarin onze synapsids zich uitstekend thuis voelen.
It's over 252 million years ago. So it's the time period that comes before the time of dinosaurs. In that time period, these ancestors of ours, these synapsids, they were the top dogs. They were the biggest creatures. They were the ones doing the most interesting stuff. You know, there was giant plant eaters and there was meat eaters and there was butterers and there was even tree climbers. So like really the world was theirs. And there were reptiles too, and they were doing some interesting things. But I mean, I think it's you know quite clear that it was the synapsids that got off like the starting post first, you know, in the so-called race for life.
It's lights out and away we go. Pretty even start from the front two. Verstappen does move over to cut off Lewis Hamilton. That gets a roar of approval. It is 1-2-3.
Ja, aan het begin van die race for life rijden onze synapsid voorouders dus weg op pole position. We liggen ver voor op die rare reptielen. En gedurende tientallen miljoenen jaren ontwikkelen zich de meest bizarre varianten van zoogdiervoorouders. En die bleven niet allemaal klein en muisachtig, helemaal niet. De grootste vleeseter was bijvoorbeeld Anteosaurus. Nou, let op, dit is geen dino, hè, ondanks de naam. Stel je een kruising voor tussen een gigantische hyena en een hagedis met slagtanden en grote klauwen. Dit 6 meter lange roofdier was de top predator in het Permtijdperk. Niet fijn. Elsa's favoriete synapsid is het dier waarop waarschijnlijk veel gejaagd werd. Moshops. Lompe naam, Maar dat past goed.
I really like most shops. I like, it's part of this group. They're called dinocephalians. So it's got dino, the same as dinosaur. So dinosaur means terrible lizards, but dinocephalian means terrible heads.
Okay.
And it's because they have these really big, thick skulls. They look very brutish. They kind of look like the guys that stand outside nightclubs and tell you you can't get in. They're really sort of massive creatures. They're like triangles with legs. They can. Some of them are over 3 meters long, so it's like the length of a car. And I just kind of love them. They're plant eaters, though. But big, chunky plant eaters.
Nou, ik laat Maarten even een plaatje zien van most shops. Kijk vooral mee op dinocast.nl. You see?
Yes. It looks quite stupid, by the way.
Well, I can't comment on that.
Ja, Maarten en Elsa hebben gelijk. Most shops is een gigantisch gedrocht van een beest. Maar wel een van de eerste experimenten van de natuur met grote zoogdiervoorouders. Most shops, maar ook Anteosaurus en andere synapsids, krijgen steeds meer kenmerken van zoogdieren. Sommige lopen al rond met de beroemde sabeltanden.
These synapsids had a number of traits that suited them to a much more active and high-energy lifestyle. And these are also some of the earliest traits that resemble those in mammals. For example, instead of having a row of teeth that were all the same size and shape, therapsids had teeth with different shapes for different functions. Carnivores like the massive Anteosaurus had large front and canine teeth for ripping flesh and smaller teeth in the back for holding prey. This trend toward more specialized teeth and jaws would continue to develop. Later carnivorous synapsids could even chew their prey rather than ripping off chunks of meat and swallowing them whole, like what reptiles and birds still do today.
Yeah, so their teeth had started to become specialized at this point. So yeah, we do have ones that are, they have teeth that are really good for grinding plants, others that have pointed saber teeth, like a saber-toothed cat. And you know, and sharp teeth at the back for like chewing up and cutting up meat. So we're starting to see that. Another thing that you maybe wouldn't have thought about with mammals, and I didn't mention earlier, is something we call the secondary palate.
Furthermore, they developed a secondary palate, which redirected their nasal passage, allowing them to chew and breathe at the same time, which is something I certainly enjoy.
Ja, okay, wacht. Een secondary palate? Wat is dat? Elsa legt uit dat onze voorouders eerst eigenlijk geen gehemelte in hun mond hadden. En dat had zowel nadelen als voordelen.
And it's basically the roof of your mouth. So obviously if you put your tongue to the top of your mouth, there's a bone
yeah.
there.
Yeah, okay.
But in our very earliest ancestors, right back at the start, they didn't have any bone there. It went straight up into their nose. So they could have used their tongue to pick their nose, basically.
Perfect. From the inside.
From the inside.
Great. Why did we lose that?
And it's really important, and it relates to everything we're talking about with eating. Because if you have a hole that goes straight from your mouth into your nose, then you can't chew and breathe at the same time.
Ah, yeah, of
then
course.
Then eventually, if that hole closes, which it did in our group of animals, it means that you can sit and chew things, and you can chew much more difficult food. You don't have to swallow it straight away. And of course, that means that you can then evolve really complex teeth to chew things because you can chew them, because you can actually breathe at the same time. So these things are all connected.
Ja, precies. Op deze manier ontwikkelden de synapsids dus een systeem voor eten, kauwen, ademen, wat wij nu nog steeds hebben. Maar even een zijlijn, synapsids, Anteosaurus, most shops. Maarten en ik worstelen met al die ingewikkelde namen. En jij vast ook. Ja, terwijl tegelijkertijd Triceratops geen enkel probleem is. Raar toch, eigenlijk?
We're just not familiar with them because we hear about dinosaurs all the time. And they're on TV and they're in the media and they're in books. But you just don't hear about these really early mammal predecessors. So it means that every single name you hear is really difficult.
What's a better name than a T-Rex? Everybody knows what it's all about, and if you're called a T-Rex, same way that Napoleon was successful.
Yeah, well, to be honest, Maarten, what Elsa says is true, I think. Why should we know what is a Triceratops or a Deinonychus or a Diplodocus? and not know about most shops or Bjarmo Sugus or whatever. It's just because we are not familiar with them, right?
Goed, we moeten er maar even aan wennen, aan de synapsids. En wat een succesverhaal, hoor ik je denken. Onbetwiste heersers over de aarde in het permtijdperk. Ja, en toch waren het enkele tientallen miljoenen jaren later niet meer de synapsids die de aarde domineerden, maar de dinosauriërs. What happened? Nou, zonder enige overdrijving, de grootste ramp die onze aarde ooit overkwam, happened.
When you think of mass extinctions, you probably think dinosaurs. Which, I mean, that's fair, because, you know, dinosaurs. But the greatest extinction event of all time wasn't about the dinosaurs at all. About 250 million years ago, something caused even more species to die out, an event called the End Permian Extinction, also known by its much cheerier name, the Great Dying.
We have this mass extinction at the end of the Permian, which took place over a really long period of time too. I mean, some of the evidence suggests possibly millions of years of volcanic eruptions and massive climate change and ecosystem collapses. And all of the stuff we were just talking about, almost all of them become extinct.
I will insert a kind of gloomy piece with all kinds of volcanic activities, and I will say in a gloomy voice, like, everybody dies.
Ja, maar toch even. The Great Dying, de massale uitsterving aan het eind van het permtijdperk, is echt de grootste ramp die de aarde ooit meemaakte. Het begon met aardbevingen en vulkaanuitbarstingen in Siberië, later overal op aarde, die minstens honderdduizenden jaren duurden. Denk daar even over na. Honderdduizenden jaren lang stuwden ze dus rook, hitte en giftige gaswolken de atmosfeer in. Wetenschappers hebben berekend dat er zoveel lava vrijkwam dat de hele Verenigde Staten met een kilometer dikke laag kan worden bedekt. Deze uitbarstingen die zetten kettingreacties in gang die het leven overal op de planeet vernietigden. Het had zelfs weinig gescheeld of de aarde was volledig ontdaan van alle levende wezens, want 70% van al het leven op land, planten en dieren, kwam om. En zelfs 96% van al het leven op zee. Een verschrikkelijke tijd om te leven. Maar zulke uitstervingsgolven zorgen ook voor een verandering in die race for life, waar onze synapsids dus zo mooi vooraan lagen. Lagen, ja. Want op pole position beginnen wil niet altijd zeggen dat je de race wint.
Hallo! It's the Red Bull of Max Verstappen that's out and into the gravel.
At least half a dozen cars involved in this. And the Red Bull of Verstappen definitely took a big hit in the gearbox and sent him into the gravel trap.
Ja, soms kan je er niks aan doen en beland je toch in de grindbak en gaat de race even door zonder jou. Deze massa-extinctie gooide de hele race op aarde in de war. Maar er waren natuurlijk bepaalde soorten zoogdiervoorouders die de ramp overleefden. Waarom zij wel en al die anderen niet? Elsa weet hoe dat komt.
I mean, there's a few things that these kinds of animals usually have in common. One thing is that they can usually eat lots of different types of food.
Generalists.
So if there's a huge disaster, yeah, generalists, the ecosystem collapses, they can make it through somehow. If you're a specialist, you generally don't do very well when things go bad. In the case of particularly the cynodonts, probably they were burrowing as well. And, you know, therefore, when there's really terrible climate change, they're able to kind of keep out of the worst of it is another thing. And we also see in mass extinctions that really, really big animals don't do very well. So most of them were relatively small, sort of cat to pig size. So they're not too big either. So they're kind of medium animals, basically. They're not.
Are humans big animals, or are we comparatively big or small?
We are actually among mammals. We're comparatively big. Most mammals alive today are rodents or bats. So, of course, as you know, all very, very small. In fact, about 80% of all mammals today are rodents.
So probably rats are doing much better in this horrible times that await us than us.
Oh, Definitely. Rats, I think, and cockroaches will do brilliantly.
Oh, my God. Don't say the word. No, this is Martin's favorite animal.
Oh, really?
I really love I really love cockroaches. They are 300 million years old.
They're amazing. Yeah. They really are incredible creatures.
Yeah, as soon as they are really hungry, they eat each other. Very, very practical solution.
We have cockroaches living in a tank in the museum, and I love going to see them.
Now, my father had cockroaches in an enormous little cabinet. And if you pulled it out, they were just running around like this. It was amazing. I really loved cockroaches.
Well, I think that they'll be around for a long time to come.
They will probably be the last, because they're also very strong when it comes to radiation.
Good point, yeah.
I promised Maarten that after the dinos, we would make a podcast about insects and cockroaches. So let us please continue, go back to the subject.
I didn't start with the cockroaches.
No. It was Elsa who did it. Okay. I remember.
It was my fault, okay. Yeah.
Okay. Goed, na al die vreselijke vulkanen van het Perm volgt de Triasperiode, het eerste deel van de dino-tijd. Ja, de naam zegt het al, toen de stofwolken letterlijk waren opgetrokken, bleek de voorsprong en dominantie van onze zoogdiervoorouders verdwenen. In het Trias zouden we de eerste dino's gaan zien. Maar wij kijken nu naar wat er met de zoogdieren gebeurt. Welke zoogdierachtige overleefde de ramp? Elsa ziet twee types. De eerste is Lystrosaurus.
Lystrosaurus is what we call a disaster taxa. So these are animals that do brilliantly after really, really terrible extinction events and disasters. But they don't necessarily do that well in the long term. And that's what happened with Lystrosaurus. I was looking actually just at a paper recently looking at Lystrosaurus in South Africa. And in this study that they did, they found that after the mass extinction, 70% of the fossils they were finding belonged to just Lystrosaurus.
70?
Just this one
70%?
Picture. 70. 70. Okay. 70.
And what does it look like?
Yeah.
Most of them are like pig-sized, so quite chunky little creatures. I always imagine them quite fat. And they're plant eaters, but they have the most amazing combination of having little tusks or little saber teeth, but they also have beaks. And they do really well through the mass extinction. And in fact, in the Triassic, they continue to do really quite well until right up to the very end of the Triassic. And one of the last of their group to live on Earth was massive. It was the size of an elephant.
Whoa.
It lived at the end of the Triassic.
Yeah. Familie van Lystrosaurus, de gigantische Lysowitzia, leefde tussen de eerste dino's in wat nu Polen is. Maar dan, die andere zoogdiervoorouder die de ramp overleefde, ja, die is niet zo sexy, maar toch interessanter. Want?
And then the other group, of course, is the one that, you know, as humans we are really interested in, and that's our ancestors, the cynodonts. And we are cynodonts. And these were small, dog-like creatures, and they had existed in the Permian as well, but they were just sort of little things. They weren't doing that much of interest. But after the Permian, that's when they start to do interesting things and start to become really mammal-y. We would recognize them at this point as being mammals. They would have had, for example, their legs are more underneath their body. They're, you know, fast moving. They would have been warmer blooded. They probably, a lot of them, would have had fur and whiskers. So all of these things, you know, if you just saw one, you'd probably know that that was a mammal. It's quite recognizable.
Yeah. Daar zijn we dan, in het Trias-tijdperk, aan het begin van de dino-tijd, hebben we dus ook de eerste herkenbare zoogdierachtige. Maar met hen lijkt het niet goed te gaan. Ze worden steeds kleiner, terwijl de dinosauriërs juist opkomen en steeds groter worden. Die doen het dus veel beter. Maar zo mag ik niet praten van Elsa.
The reptiles become bigger. And the mammals go the opposite way. They all become much smaller. By the end of the Triassic, they're really very small. So the dinosaurs start to exploit being really big and moving into those kinds of, you know, ecosystem spaces. And of course, they also become very, very diverse. They start to do lots of different things. So that's why, I guess, we call it the Age of Reptiles. But I don't like words like better or worse, because I don't think really that kind of captures it. Because coming back to the question Martin asked earlier, you know, were there as many mammals, for example, as there were dinosaurs? I strongly suspect that there were huge numbers of mammals, but they're all little and we don't find their bones very easily. The same way that there was probably a huge number of tiny lizards and amphibians as well, just like an ecosystem today. You know, if you go out for a walk in the woods, you might find the skeleton of a deer, but you're not going to find all the skeletons of the thousands of mice that have died and things and birds, because they're too tiny and they disappear and they, you know, get eaten up in the leaf litter and so on. And it's the same with the fossil record. It's very difficult to find little things. So that's one of the reasons that they seem to be so scarce in the time of dinosaurs, because they're very small and hard to find.
Yeah. Moeilijk te vinden dus, maar we vinden ze wel steeds vaker. Zoogdiertjes uit de dino-tijd worden inmiddels veel bestudeerd. En dat geeft een fascinerend beeld wat echt de moeite waard is. Ook al zitten we in de tijd van de dinosauriërs en de podcast van de dinosauriërs. Elsa en Maarten spreken me nog één keer vermanend toe. En misschien jou ook wel een beetje, beste luisteraar.
The dinosaurs are interesting and they're a touchstone. Like if you say something's really old, I always say it's from the time before the dinosaurs, the time of the dinosaurs, or just after the time of the dinosaurs, because we all know when that was. We know it was a long time ago. But I think for my book, I wanted to try and get people to say, okay, it's the time of dinosaurs, but try not to think about them, because I want you to think about something else for a little while. And in my case, it was mammals, not because I don't like the other creatures, but because that's just what I study. But equally interesting are the amphibians and the insects and, you know, in the seas, the squid. They're all doing interesting things. They just all get overshadowed because, you know, dinosaurs do get a lot of attention.
I'm thinking about, do I cut out all the parts where you talk about other animals than mammals? Or?
Sorry, guys. I think people should learn that you always have to think about all the animals and all their different talents and why they survived or didn't survive.
Yeah, I know. I'll leave it in.
And also, I mean, if you're totally fascinated by dinosaurs and nothing else, you don't have a complete picture of how the dinosaurs lived if you don't know about the things that lived with them. I mean, it's like, imagine trying to understand, you know, like lions in the plains of Africa, but not paying any attention to the plants or the, you know, the other animals that lived there. It's just, you need to know about everything, or it's just not a proper picture.
Dus niet alleen geeft het je een veel completer en echter beeld van de dino-tijd, vergeet niet dat het ook ons verhaal is. Deze cynodonts, die kleine hondachtige zoogdiertjes, die zijn echt onze voorouders.
The age of reptiles had begun. Meanwhile, the descendants of those little cynodonts persisted hiding in the dinosaur shadows. So to this day, the legacy of those very first terrestrial ecosystems lives on in today's mammals, including us. So you may not see the family resemblance, but those features still connect you to that long forgotten animal even after more than a quarter of a billion years.
Nou, en volgende week gaan Maarten, Elsa en ik kijken hoe het de zoogdieren in de dino-tijd vergaat. En we gaan op bezoek in Maastricht, waar in het Natuurhistorisch Museum een stukje zoogdier ligt uit de dino-tijd, wat er gekoesterd wordt als een bijzondere schat. En terecht.
Ik moest onmiddellijk denken aan die twee hamsters van Albert Heijn, die namelijk enorm intelligente hamsters zijn. Die konden een hartje op een ruit tekenen, begrijp ik.
Exact,
van twee,
hè?
Totaal verschillende hamstersoorten ook nog. Maar ze hadden wel interesse in elkaar.
Die kersthamsters.
Je ziet dit beest ook. Het is een clever beestje. Ja. Dit is toch een beestje wat naar buiten keek en al die dinosauriërs daar zag en dacht van... Hè?
Wacht maar.
Indrukwekkend, maar,
ja, wacht maar.
Wacht maar wat wij gaan presteren. Hè? Ja. Je ziet hem al denken aan die besmetting met de Omicron variant.
Dat volgende week in DinoCast. En wil je in de tussentijd nou al meer weten? Bestel dan snel dat boek van Elsa, Beasts Before Us. Dat gaat precies over dit onderwerp. En dat kun je bestellen op dinocast.nl. Tot volgende week.